Hi, and welcome to the AA Grapevine. I'm your volunteer reader, Shelley Miller. Today I'll be reading from the September 2024 issue of the AA Grapevine. This is part one for the month. The articles we'll be hitting here in the part one is all about being young and sober. Let's get started. And our first story is called Hanging with My Gang. Boy, was he glad when a posse of young people showed up at his meeting. Together, they learned how to have fun without drinking. In January of 1973, I walked through the door of an AA beginners meeting at the Calvary Episcopal Church in Manhattan. There I found a mixture of a dozen or so older people, former barflies like me, sitting in brown metal chairs around a long table. The meeting was much different than I had expected. An older, well-dressed woman introduced herself as Val, then told her story. At first, I judged her, yet something threw me off balance. She talked about cravings. I had those. She talked about hiding bottles so her family couldn't see how much she was drinking. I did that too. She described the rationalization she relied on to foster her drinking and to dissociate herself from how her frequency of hitting the bottle was getting worse and worse. But I was confused. I was 25 and she was old, probably in her 40s then, but she described the same progression then happening to me. More upsetting was her repeatedly referring to herself as an alcoholic. I was so uncomfortable that I didn't listen to all of Val's story. However, she did invite anyone new to stay for the next meeting. I decided to stay. I was desperate. But did identifying with these former boozers mean I might be an alcoholic too? Oh my God, I thought. Please no. I wanted to find out how I might be different from these people, but the second meeting didn't help at all. These alcoholics talked openly about the same things that happened to me, incidents that were my dark secrets, like getting thrown out of bars and social events and losing jobs. One guy even talked about how his shrink dropped him from therapy. The only difference I could find was that these members were older than me. Being too young, you might be my ticket out of this. During this meeting break, this big guy, who looked like Tony Soprano, came up to me and in a gruff voice said, "Are you new?" Yes, this is my first time," I replied. Pointing his finger at me, Tony said, "Okay, I'm going to tell you how it works. Just today, you don't pick up a drink, even if your rear end falls off. You got it?" I was a little frightened and swallowed hard. "Yes, I think so," I answered. "Sounds to me like you have a reservation," he said. "What makes you think you don't have a drinking problem?" I quickly blurted out, "Because I'm only 25. Tony glared at me for several seconds, then said, "Wait right here." He left and came back and introduced me to a guy named Kevin, who turned out to be 22. So much for the age excuse. Okay, so I was an alcoholic, but I was certain AA wouldn't work, and I secretly set out to prove my point. I committed to 90 meetings in 90 days, got an excellent sponsor, and began working on the steps. Then, strangely, positive coincidences started to materialize. I got a job. Also, the lease on my apartment was up, and I couldn't afford the new raise in rent. I was facing eviction until I ran into Tony's friend, Kevin. He told me he was the superintendent for a building of small furnished rooms. Now I had a new place to live. The score for providing the program couldn't work for me was now AA3 Clyde 0. Over the next few weeks, 8 young refugees from the 60s Summer of Love stumbled into our AA group. Because grown-ups made up the majority of my meetings, I was as glad to see them as they were to see me. Sensing our newcomer frailty, we younger members banded together. After our meetings, we all sat in coffee shops talking about how to live and understand the recovery process. We were sober but not yet sure how to cope with life without alcohol. All of us were around the same age, a time for youthful partying. Our sponsors told us to avoid people, places, and things that were part of our drinking life. Bonding together, we learned how to deal with avoiding all of our former party animal friends. During that initial 90 days, our youthful crew learned how to enjoy sober entertainment. Going to the movies, bowling, and museum was like going on a date with 8 friends. In addition, we attended parties hosted by different AA group members with long-term sobriety. Our little group was of mixed gender, so naturally there were several attempts at romantic relationships. Unfortunately, they were short, dismal failures, as our sponsors warned us they would be. As time passed, we continued to support each other, and handling job interviews, planning realistic careers, and dealing with life on life's terms. 90 days turned into a year, and things dramatically changed. Unfortunately, two of our posse went back out, but the rest of us held on. Thanks to meeting sponsors, working the steps, and help from a higher power, our success in sober life grew. Gradually, we all lost touch. Some of the gang moved away, some went on to start families, and others just disappeared. Yet though our time together had passed, we are all in a place so far beyond anything we could have imagined back in those after-meeting coffee shop get-togethers. In our God-given AA program, I celebrated 49 years of continuous sobriety this past January. So what happened to my plan to prove AA wouldn't work for me? Well, apparently, I was wrong. Signed, Clyde M., Dallas, Texas. And this next story is entitled, Soaking in the Sun. On rooftops, at the ocean, on the dance floor, she and her sober crew laughed, cried, and celebrated their new lives. I was approached by a friend from my home group a while back about writing an article on getting sober young. He said he wanted to know what could possibly have compelled me to want to get sober at such an early age. So here's my story. When I first got to AA, I can't say that getting sober was something I wanted. I was 24 and felt half out of my mind. I was suffering from one panic attack after another, and I could barely see straight. I wasn't going to meetings, I didn't have a sponsor, and I had two recent relapses. After 30 days of being dry, more than anything, I wanted to get out of my own skin. But the seed of sobriety that had been planted by my previous two attempts to stop drinking finally began to take root. I was desperate. I picked up the phone and called a woman who had told her story in a meeting the first night I walked into AA, and I asked her for help. She very gently guided me into a program of rigorous action that brought me into a life well beyond my wildest dreams. My first home group was a large meeting. It was an eclectic group, you might say. I felt more strongly that I belonged there than I had ever felt anywhere in my life. Although I had friends of all ages, all backgrounds, and all walks of life, if not for this fellowship of young people within that home group, I'm not sure I would have kept coming back. Having a group of young people my age allowed me to experience the excitement of being in my 20s without having to drink. We traveled everywhere together, to AA conventions and roundups. We sat on rooftops of beach houses soaking up the sun and staring out into the ocean. We sat in the back of diners smoking cigarettes until 2 a.m, talking about everything under the sun. We dressed to the nines for alcathons and danced like no one was watching. We went to our favorite concerts and danced at clubs. We laughed together, cried together, and celebrated together. One of my favorite memories was the time I faced a true hardship in my sobriety. I had recently lost both a job and a relationship. I got to see how God shows up in my life. That day, I was dragged to a meeting by my roommate. After the much-needed meeting was over, a few of my friends came over and asked me to go hang out downtown. I cried on about how I lost my job and needed to figure that out. Great, you don't have to get up for work in the morning, so you can go with us, one of them said. But I don't have my keys or my phone, I replied. What do you need your keys and cell phone, they asked. I looked at them and shrugged. Well, I guess I don't, I said. With that, I let go and jumped in the car with my fellows and headed downtown without expectations or reservations. We played in the water fountain. We ate ice cream. We danced in the streets with the street musician. When we came back to the parking lot of a local grocery store at 4 a.m. and played soccer in the empty parking lot, that was by far one of the best nights of my life. God and my fellows showed up. Over the years, we have watched each other grow in the rooms. A lot of us are still here. Some of us got it to make it through college and start careers. We bought our first cars or even our first houses. A lot of us got married and had children. We also suffered loss and heartache, but we continued to stay sober and to stay committed to our primary purpose through whatever life had dealt us. When I came in at 24, I was convinced that I had drunk my entire life away. I thought my life was beyond repair and I was doomed to loneliness and despair. Today I'm 44. Last year I celebrated 20 years sober. I've been sober now longer than I drank. I also celebrated 10 years of marriage to a man who has never seen me drunk. He sees me as the woman I wanted to become. My husband and I have two absolutely beautiful young children who have also never seen me drink, and God willing, they never will. Who knew at 24 that my life was actually just beginning? I do not take this disease lightly. It's constantly progressing, so my program of recovery must also be in a state of progression. Today, I stay active in my steps, work with sponsees, go to about 4 meetings a week, and do service. I realize I'm now one of the old people the young newcomers see when they walk in the rooms for the first time. So I make it a point to always reach out and reassure them that I was once where they are now, and I get it. I support young people's conventions and groups to attract newcomers to a new way of life, so they don't have to drink away their lives and come in much later than they have to. That was the gift that was so generously given to me. Signed, anonymous, in Somerville, South Carolina. Sober at 16. He drank to escape the world until one day a guy named Steve told him he wouldn't have to hurt anymore. The mental energy required for a teenager to successfully acquire alcohol for a weekend house party or camping trip and arrive safely back at home on a Sunday night, convincing parents that it was just another sober teen weekend, is a feat worthy of a medal. The isms were all there before my first drunk. At 9 years old, I was awkward, insecure, depressed, and afraid. Alcohol numbed the pain and helped me make sense of the world. Alcohol saved my life for a little while. I wanted to get more drunk more than I wanted to commit suicide, but that didn't last long. Alcohol turned on me. It owned me. I had accepted that this was my punishment for being born. I had a fleeting solace in knowing I would die earlier than my teenage peers, praying life would not last past my early 20s, which seemed like an eternity. Then one beautiful spring day in May of 1993, I woke up once again with an inexplicable anxiety and depression fueled by an insatiable obsession to escape from life. I was just 16. That day, I walked into a rehab with my parents, feeling something alien inside, surrender and hope. Both would become a little more tolerable during my 30-day inpatient reprieve from the world I went to battle with and lost every day. You can't lose a battle when you learn how to surrender. One of the great paradoxes of AA I learned, surrender to win. In the AA meetings at the rehab, I listened the best I could. I heard people's war stories of loss, hardships, adult anxieties, and fears, each one of them representing indisputable proof that I did not belong there. Someone had made a big mistake. The first day, a guy named Steve K. welcomed me and asked if I'd like to share. Was he seriously talking to me? How did he know it was my first meeting? Was this geriatric 35-year-old hired by my parents to spy on me? I looked around the room and got paranoid. I thought I was going to spontaneously combust, and I wanted to. All these people were hired to bring me down. The gig was up. Little did I know that there was some truth in my paranoia. The gig was up, and those people were there for me. I stared back at the old man, Steve. He was wearing a ridiculous Mickey Mouse sweatshirt and an even more ridiculous earring in his right ear. Everything about him made me feel sorry for him. I thought about how he must have been teased and bullied his entire life. Why else would he be there? He had this unusual smile that made me uncomfortable. He wasn't smiling at me with ridicule or contempt. He was smiling into me, through me, almost as if he already knew me. I dramatically pushed my chair away from the table, stood up, and walked toward the door. I didn't get far. A counselor and security guy blocked my way. They had different types of smiles on their faces, authoritative ones I knew well. I was about to make my first truly sober decision. Today, I refer to that moment as the tale of two smiles. I chose geriatric Steve's smile. It would become the best decision I could ever make. I was also the first time I would acknowledge a higher power working in my life. The more AA meetings I attended, the easier it became for me to listen. But that was a double-edged sword. The meeting I disliked the most was the Sunday morning meeting. Inpatients had to sit at Paul's table. No one was allowed to leave until everyone shared. And that's not to be confused with until everyone had a chance to share. I was well-versed in manipulating a room so I could slip away. But Paul was like an AA Jedi master. When it was my turn, the room got silent. Other than my rapid heart rate, my mouth opened and I shared the only thing I was capable of. I spoke of being fired from a burger joint 3 times and about stealing money from my grandfather's wallet, my grandmother's purse, my sister's lockbox, and my neighbor's open garage so I could drink. I spoke of my alienation and isolation from my family, sports teams, Cub Scouts, and school. I spoke of what it felt when I looked in the mirror, the absolute disgust and overwhelming shame. However, my shares never seemed to be enough. I was constantly comparing my stories with theirs, my insides with their outsides. I was so lost in the detail that I missed the only thing that mattered, the great equalizer for all us alcoholics when we stop comparing and competing and start relating to the pain and the fear we have all experienced, the pain that brought us to our knees. It took me 10 months of going to meetings every day, sometimes twice a day, to say I was an alcoholic out loud. Although I was agitated and frustrated, my sponsor and my grand sponsor immediately got me into the program. I was still a teenager. I had to learn how to brush my teeth twice a day, consume more than soda and chocolate bars, and shower once a day. I also had to learn to sleep. After that, I was promoted to level 2, emptying ashtrays and being a door greeter. Seriously, what did this have to do with staying sober? Turns out, everything. These guys carried me and loved me until I could learn to do so myself. Their fellowship grew up around me as I was growing up in the rooms. The only thing my sponsor promised me early on was that alcohol didn't have to hurt me anymore. What I didn't realize yet was that the steps 2 through 12 were going to fulfill his second promise. I didn't have to hurt myself anymore either. So I followed the rules the best I could. I listened to my sponsor. I was doing service and I had a home group. I even started to read the big book. School was in session. The classes were invigorating. The textbook captured my attention. The tuition was affordable and there was no attendance policy, no pop quizzes or final semester exams, and I would never be suspended or expelled. There was a catch, though. I would never graduate and I'd never receive a diploma. My motives for making meetings was not the purest early on. I was still convinced I might find the secret to AA, how to drink responsibly. Sorry, kids. 26 years later, I still haven't found that secret. I stopped searching for it years ago. Instead, I found another secret, the ultimate treasure, freedom from alcohol and from all the isms that make up alcoholism, but only one day at a time. Remember Steve, the old guy with the Mickey Mouse shirt? I've called Steve every day for the last 26 years. He has been so many things in my life, friend, brother, father, mentor, but most importantly, sponsor. Today I understand the first message he taught me after I mustered the courage to ask him to be my sponsor. Your courage will keep you sober today, but your courage will keep me sober every day. He told me, even if you drink, I still have a 100% success rate as a sponsor as long as I don't drink. Even as a 16-year-old kid being raised in the rooms of AA and in the homes and families of its members, not once was I made to feel like I didn't belong or that my story wasn't good enough. People just made me feel at home. I finally found my brothers and sisters in AA, the ones who taught me to check my ego at the door, to trust, and to feel safe and free. Signed, Steve M. in Exton, Pennsylvania. And the title of this one is High Fives. A young sober member gets outside help for his mental health and joins in the love at his young people in AA groups. When I was 18, a nurse at a mental health hospital told me I was an alcoholic. When I replied, no, I just smoked too much marijuana, she said, you'll be back. I kept drinking for 2 more years. On the night of my 20th birthday, I had 5 shots of vodka, 2 32-ounces of beers, and played 5 rounds of beer pong. But I was not living the high life because I was drinking until 5 a.m. and had work at 8 a.m. I could barely longboard home. During my brief sleep, the memory of that nurse came back, and I prayed to God, I need help, I said. That night, I had my last drink. I got sober in Burbank, California, but really claimed Tucson, Arizona as where I got sober because that's where I started working the steps and creating a conscious contact with my higher power. When I was 20, I read the Big Book with a sponsor, but thought if I can no longer be sober on my own, then I know where to go. Thanks for the information. For a couple years, I was just dry and not working the steps. I'd go to AA meetings and pick up my sobriety coins to show off. One day, I was putting groceries away at my mom's house, and I saw a beer. Boy, did I want it. That night, I went to an AA meeting and got a sponsor, the first real one I'd had. He was 19, and I was 24 with most more sober time, but I was willing to go to any lengths. He and I read the Big Book, line by line, and when we got to the end, I started to cry. I was sobbing because it literally took me 3 years to do this. Still, I had been off my psychiatric medication for 5 years and was disrupting AA meetings due to my active psychosis. I ended up at a psych hospital, and I had 4 years sober at the time, which was humbling. I had to make a lot of amends to people at my home group, my loved ones, and people who were on the Arizona State Conference of Young People in AA, ASCIPA Committee. After I got stable, the ICIPA Committee asked me to share on the mental health panels at ASCIPA and the Southwest Area ICIPA. These panels were standing room only. I was still suicidal after I got out of the psych hospital, but I got outside help. I hope if you're reading this and are thinking about ending your life, that you gather enough courage to get help. The Big Book in the family afterward talks about the importance of taking care of our mental health. Today I work for a mental health line where I can use my experience to help people who have gone through similar situations. Our AA pamphlet, the AA Member Medication and Other Drugs, talks about how some alcoholics need to be on meds because if we're not taking care of our mental health, like that nurse practitioner told me long ago, you'll be back. At ICIPA conferences, I love to run around the main speaker meetings giving members high fives when member sobriety year, month, or day is mentioned. At this past ASCIPA was super important to me because it's very rare for someone with just 24 hours of sobriety to go up to the podium and say, "Hey, I'm an alcoholic." This time, my friend, who had only one day, came up. I gave her a hug and said, "You're coming with us." With tears in her eyes, she said, "Okay." My friend is still sober today. Talk about an experience I'll never forget. Signed, A.M. in Tucson, Arizona. Stories like mine. A young gay woman learns that getting sober and sharing her truth in AA was just the connection she needed. I never imagined I'd identify as an alcoholic, nor did I consider that one day I would proudly identify as a gay woman. In my mind, individuals of this type had a very specific look. An alcoholic wandered the streets at night clutching a bottle in a paper bag. A gay woman always appeared masculine. Boy, have my views changed since then. I was born in a suburban town filled with well-to-do. Growing up, I always felt different. I believed that no one would understand me. And while the girls in middle school were having crushes on boys, I could not relate to that either. By the time I made it to high school, I professed that I'd never drink alcohol or do drugs. In hindsight, I'd see this proclamation as a feeling of self-righteousness. I wanted to be better than the kids who were getting wasted on Friday evenings. I was unaware that I'd soon be like them. And even worse. Meanwhile, I got further in the closet than ever. In my mind, it wasn't an option to be attracted to women. I concentrated completely on my studies and sports. I slowly became obsessed with everything I committed myself to. I was a perfectionist. Now that I'm in AA, I know that I'm not alone with these traits. Drinking did not become a part of my story until I was 19 and in college. That's when my previous hesitation to drink suddenly went out the window. I simply didn't care anymore. The first time I drank, it was euphoric. From then on, I tried to fill that void in me with drugs and alcohol. For an extremely short period of time, drinking worked. It lowered my inhibitions. The shame and fear I experienced about my sexuality went away. I was able to talk about it for the first time ever. I realized I was part of the LGBTQ+ community, and I was no longer scared to say that. I truly believed that alcohol gave me the power to come out. For a while, I became a confident, fearless, powerful woman. I didn't realize that all of this was a great facade and that I would spend a great deal of time in AA later trying to work through these old ideas. I didn't know it then, but alcohol had become my higher power. I came out of the closet in June of 2016. It changed my life, but getting sober has changed it infinitely more. I entered a treatment a year later. At the time, I never thought I would feel okay. Alcohol had given me strength, courage, and freedom. In treatment, I learned that I would get all those things through sobriety, through Alcoholics Anonymous. It took a lot for me to come into the rooms of AA. I didn't think I'd find other people like me. I was now self-identified as a gay woman. I suddenly realized that all the attributes I held profoundly were now insecurities. I was shy, fearful, self-loathing, and powerless. It took many months to realize that last quality, powerless. I blamed others for my unmanageability. Today I understand powerlessness. It means that I need help, that I can't do this alone. I need this program. After I started coming consistently to AA meetings, I met a woman who later became my sponsor. She has since guided me through every trial and tribulation I've had in sobriety. Through her, I've met many fabulous sober women who inspire me every day. During my first year, I went to a meeting every day. Some days I doubled up on my meetings, especially around the holidays. I loved women's meetings. I bonded well with the other women. When I first came in, I didn't think I'd have anything in common with women of all different ages. However, I found that I can connect with individuals of all ages. I still have those old ideas that I'm not good enough and no one will like me. Through letting others in, my old ideas make less and less sense. When I did my inventory, I realized that fear of abandonment topped my list. AA has taught me that I can handle anything, including my biggest fears. Recently, I've had the opportunity to attend a lesbian meeting in my area. I've gotten to meet other lovely women who share stories similar to my own. Although I'm in the LGBTQ+ sober community, it's just like other alcoholics I've met in this program. I'm learning that if I put myself out there and share my truth, I can experience the miracle of connection and recovery. AA has given me everything my active alcoholism took away and more. The other night, I was struggling to fall asleep and I had this amazing thought. Gosh, I hope I don't pick up alcohol again. Life's starting to get really good. Signed, MJ in Jersey City, New Jersey. And that brings us to the end of this September 2024 issue of the AA Grapevine. This was part one. Thank you for listening. My name is Shelley Miller, and I have been your volunteer reader. Stay tuned for more great programming on Sun Sounds.